This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Welcome to the fire.
Welcome to the fire, boys. My name is Parker McDonald.
And I'm Walter Lee, and we'll be your hosts on this episode of the Southern Collective Hunting Podcast. If you're a new hunter trying to learn the basics,
or you're a veteran woodsman just trying to get through your workday, there's always a place at our campfire for you.
Speaking of the fire, we would love it if you guys would join our growing Patreon community and be a part of the best and only digital deer camp south of Mason-Dixon Line.
Come on. If you'd like to learn more, click on the link in the show notes. But for now, Walt,
welcome to the fire.
Okay, welcome back to another round of the Southern Collective Podcast. As y'all probably can tell, there's a different voice behind the mic starting this one off. I'll be kind of hosting this podcast tonight, Matthew Reeves here. Unfortunately, Walt, Parker, and Brett are both busy. They're all either vacationing, anniversarying, or had a new baby, which will, if y'all didn't know, Brett and his wife welcomed a new baby boy into the world last week, so we're really excited for him. He's trying to get used to getting bottles ready and staying up all night and just being a dad, but I believe that he's going to be a good dad. But anyways, with all of that, we wanted to bring y'all an episode this week highlighting one of our Patreon members and where he is from. Their season opened up last week, I believe, and they hit the woods hard. We had a lot of kills in the Patreon group, but one really stuck out to us. And it's Cole Fleeman. He killed a really good deer, and we're going to kind of discuss through that, learn a little bit about Cole. But Cole, how are you doing today, man?
I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
Doing good. Can't complain. It's almost the weekend. Wish I could go hunting.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, having one in the cooler definitely makes it a little easier to lay low off hunting for a week.
I was about to ask, are you going to go this weekend?
There's a possibility, but I think I might stay home, do some honeydews, and earn myself some brownie points for later in the season.
I understand. I remember you were talking, you said I thought I was good shooting that one, and then I think you had another buck like coming in and replace him, another pretty good buck, and you were like, man, I gotta go kill him too.
Yeah, it wasn't but two nights after the morning I shot my buck, a new buck that we never even had on camera before showed up. Real nice 8 point, has a little 1 inch drop tine on one side, and real unique, cool looking buck, and immediately got the itch going again. So
it's people always try to say, you know, why like I've had people ask me, you kill one, are you not satisfied? Like, no, there's like the hunger that to keep going back. So that's pretty interesting that you had one just show back up that quick. But Cole, any new listeners kind of about yourself, where you're from, kind of maybe even what you do. I know we've talked a little bit about your pig trapping and dog tracking, but if you could just give us a little rundown about that real quick.
Yeah, I'm from Pasco. Well, I'm from Pinellas County, Florida, but reside in Pasco County now. I work full-time for a pest control company, and I have a side business, Southern Wildlife Removal, and we focus mainly on commercial hog removal. So for HOAs, CDDs, basically neighborhoods. That started probably 10, 12 years ago now. And we've kind of grown over the years and started off as a hobby where we did it for free. And then a couple of the accounts that we picked up along the way got a little bit more serious about their subcontractors and approached me and asked if I was interested in starting a business so I could perform the work, but under their criteria. So after consideration, I pulled the trigger, started a business, got insurance, and started making money doing it. So that was a pretty cool transition in life right there. And yeah, I mean, it's going pretty well there. I've born and raised in Florida, been hunting in Florida pretty much the last 12, 13 years now. And I can't get enough of it. Love it.
Now, you say you can't get enough of it. I've heard you say a lot of times you'd like to move up north, but you don't like the cold weather. Is that right?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. If I didn't have to worry, I mean, our winters here are really mild. I mean, if we see 30 degrees, it's not but for a day or two before it warms back up. And those 30 degree days, I love hunting in them for a little bit, but as soon as I get cold, I'm ready to call it quits.
Yeah. Go get back in that heated house or heated truck and warm up a little bit. Well, Cole, it's, you know, from us talking here, we've talked a little bit on polo, you know, to really hear your story. That's pretty interesting about the hog trapping and how it's grown. I've shot my fair share of hogs. I've never trapped hogs, but it seems like it could be neat. But it's cool to see how somebody had a hobby and then it turned into a paying job. A lot of times you don't see that with hobbies, whether it be hunting, golf, fishing, you know, that doesn't happen a lot of times. So that's encouraging to see that it happened with you. Now our connection is through SoCo, through the Patreon. When I joined on with SoCo, you know, you're one of those guys. And for some reason, I connect, you know, sometimes you have guys you connect with and sometimes it's kind of like, oh, they're not 100% like me. And that's normal. But I don't know. I guess from our conversations, I felt like we've kind of connected. We kind of like some of the same things. But when did you join the Patreon account?
I believe this is year two. I think I joined. right before the season started in 2021. Okay. Somewhere in that time range. So it's been about 2 years now.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. Yeah, I haven't even been on a year, and just to see what's all there and the advice. And you talk a lot about blood trailing. So what do you have, one or two dogs now that you do blood trailing with?
I just have the one I'm training right now.
Okay.
I worked my last dog for 4 years. About 4 years on track, and he got into it pretty well. I got into it pretty late in his life, and we got 4 years of some good blood trailing, and
yeah,
it was fun. And I grew a passion for that probably more than I actually enjoy hunting myself. So, after he passed, I couldn't wait to get another dog. And now I have one. He's an 8-month-old German Shepherd Pointer. And we worked all off season. Well, from the time he was able to focus on something, started working him, and he's shown a lot of potential. We actually went on our first track last night, and it was recovery. So that was awesome. He did way better than I anticipated. So I'm real happy with his progress.
Shoot, man. I try to tell people I had a duck dog, and I trained her to duck hunt, but there, I don't know if there's anything more satisfying in life than actually training a dog, and putting that work in, whether it be obedience or just their natural ability. Like, that's so rewarding to see it, you know, pan out. Like you said, that was your first recovery the other night, and just to see that journey kind of from what y'all worked in this whole off season to that point, pay off. So you were bringing us along for that, that track, and that was pretty awesome, and how dogs can work. But man, let's get to the real reason why we're here tonight.
All right.
You were able to put some points on the board for the whippersnappers in our deer contest. and it was the opening hunt. Was it? It was your first sit. It was opening morning, right?
Yes, sir. Yep, open morning. God, it's 15. Dude.
God, you bringing back flashbacks. I love an opening morning. Kind of tell us your hunting situation. Like, are you hunting? I know you hunt some public, you hunt some private in between. Like, what was your kind of game plan for this season? You told me you have two kids, so you're busy with your kids, you're busy with your job. Like, how did you kind of set yourself up to where you thought you had a chance on opening morning?
So with the two kids, it definitely puts a damper in your time in the woods as far as scouting and, you know, just getting out there and seeing what's going on. So I went into this season mainly aiming towards private property other than the public land quotas that I got drawn for. So, and those are all places that I'm real familiar with and super confident in. So I have a good lead for those spots. So I don't have to spend as much time, but I really wanted to work on the private property this whole off season, which is what we did. I mean, we did a lot of hog management out there as well, because it's overran with pigs, and those pigs will drive those deer out so quick. So just about every opportunity that I got, I'd go down and shoot as many pigs as I possibly could. Me and a couple buddies were pretty regular with going down there and just keeping tabs on them. But yeah, that was my game plan, was just basically set up the private property, because it's a easier thing to just go to when I get the chance, instead of, you know, hunting, you know, a quota free WMA that I would probably have to go and spend quite a bit of time scouting and pinpointing, which is one of my favorite things to do, which is a bummer because I love public land. I got into hunting on public land. So that was my main focus for the first, I guess you can say, 9 years of my hunting career before I had kids, was public land, public land, public land.
Yeah.
I never actually had any private to even hunt. So, but yeah, that was and just give me the best opportunity at killing some deer this season, where I do all the work off season, and during season I get to kind of just, you know, reap the rewards.
Yeah. Yeah. I got a question real quick. With your hog trapping and everything, with you're trapping on private property, do you ever get any like private access for hunting through your hog jobs?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So some of the accounts are a little bit more strict than others. Some of them don't care. They basically just give you free rein as long as you're not, you know, doing anything too dangerous, like shooting rifles through the woods. And, you know, so basically we have a rule where we only bow hunt. So
yeah,
between just depending on the size of the property, you know, we have some accounts that are super small, 10 acre blocks. And then we have accounts that have, you know, 200 to 400 acres of woods that we can hunt. Mm-hmm. So we basically figure out what the land manager's okay with, and then we'll go from there. So, the particular property that I did shoot the buck on, opening morning is one of the accounts, and we don't charge them a penny for our services in exchange for allowing us to remove the pigs. They let us do a little bit of deer hunting. So it's a win-win for us because we love shooting pigs and trapping pigs, and however we can get them out, we'll get them out. And in return, we get to shoot some really nice deer.
Golly, that's awesome. I know you always hear people are like, how do I get a private land property when, you know, there's so many leases out there now, like it's hard to get your foot in. And even if you do get your foot in, you're paying, you know, out the wazoo just to be able to hunt, you know, a couple hundred acres. Yeah. But like, from what you're saying, like you're providing a service, one, for these landowners, and then, you know, you're doing it for free so you can hunt. Like, if you're able to provide a service for somebody, they're going to be a lot more likely to let you hunt their property rather than you just going up and going, hey, can I, you know, hunt your property for no cost? So that, man, that's awesome. Yep. to hear that, because like I'm a forester, so I'll tell people that, you know, I'll do land management stuff and put their land in certification programs and stuff like that. And that works. But to do the hog stuff, and people, you know, they want the hogs gone and they don't really care that much about deer, but people don't understand how destructive hogs are. They are nasty creatures.
Yeah. Oh, they're terrible.
I mean, every food plot, like I used to go down south. Well, I lived in Florida for a little while, and one of the public pieces I hunted on, they were just covered. Like, I mean, you thought you saw a deer sign under an oak tree, and that was just, you know, it was nothing but hog sign. But anyways, with permission stuff, so you gained this access through trapping hogs. So you've got the place you need to hunt. When did you locate this buck? I think you'd had him on camera for a little while. Is that right?
Yes. So the way that this property lays out is it actually backs up to a pretty good size preserve. And it's a real small bottleneck where it actually meets up to the preserve. So we stay away from that. That allows the deer to come into the property a little bit further. And basically, and this is coming from somebody who loves to hunt public land, hunting over feeders. I'm not dogging on it whatsoever, because I do it, and I'm shooting the deer to me. But it's definitely a newer thing, but running the feeders year round and getting those deer used to them is the key. That was basically our key all off season. I think I even posted in the polo a couple of clips of sitting in the stand hog hunting and having really nice elk bucks come in.
Yeah.
But, he was just one of those strays that showed up out of nowhere. He stuck around for, I think it was about 2 weeks before season started. And, there's four or five different doe groups that kind of hang out in that block. And I think he was just kind of hanging out with that one, kind of laying claim to him, because it's probably anything that was there rutting hard in there. So my buddy and I that hunt the property, he was going to hunt one stand, had a couple bucks showing up, and I was going to hunt another stand that had that buck and a couple other smaller bucks. And we were just hoping for the best. Friday before the weekend opener, we didn't have a single buck show up to any of the stands. So par for the course, day before season, they know what's going on somehow, some way. And I got lucky. He was the only deer that showed up on any camera that morning.
Now, y'all are running cell cameras, right?
Yes.
Yep. Yeah. So that's the bad part about cell cameras, because it probably, if it wasn't opening day and you were itching to hunt, you probably wouldn't have gone in there because he disappeared, right?
Oop, you broke up there at the end.
Yeah, I said if you had cell cameras and you saw that deer wasn't in there, if it wasn't open today, you probably wouldn't have gone in there to hunt.
No, I probably would have.
You would have? Okay.
That's the one thing about cameras.
I'm the other way. I'd be like, man, I got to go somewhere else.
Yeah. Well, that's the beauty of hunting a spot all off season for pigs. Mm-hmm. Is you kind of get a lay of the land and you figure out all the game trails. So just because they're not on camera doesn't mean that they're not 20 yards on the other side of the stand. And one thing about the deer in that property is off season, they'll eat the corn. So they're rutting, they will not show up to the feeders. So that's why we wanted to hunt opening weekend, because last season we weren't prepped for deer hunting whatsoever in there. Mm-hmm. We had way too many pigs. We were more focused on getting as many pigs as we can get out of there. So we didn't really pay any attention. Sorry. We didn't pay any attention to the deer for the first half of the season because the pigs were so bad. But we figured out where all the game trails were. So just because they're not showing up on camera doesn't mean that they're not walking right past the tree stands.
I think we need to get a recording of that and play it like 10 times over and over when we go to like pick a spot. Yeah. Because so many people, including myself, are that way. They just get honed in. So Cole, let's take a deep dive actually into the hunt and kind of what happened. So, you knew this buck was in here. You knew he was hanging out with doe groups. Like, did you need a certain wind to hunt the area, or were you just going to hunt it regardless? And then how did the morning kind of play out?
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I was going to go in there one way or the other because at the end of the day, it's still our job to shoot pigs. So I'm too fired up to not go. I actually had probably the worst wind that you could have asked for that spot.
Really?
But there was no, yeah, the way the spot sets up is I need a wind basically directly out of the north, or I need a wind coming out of the northwest. So one of those two is basically the only way that spot produces well. Comes from west, and of course opening morning we had about a 6 mile an hour east wind at 7 a.m So yeah, I mean, it was absolutely terrible for that setup, but the pigs come in from any direction. Typically if they wind you, they'll just circle and come in from the other direction. So I didn't care. I was there. It was opening morning. There was no way I was going to miss it. We didn't have any deer on camera Friday, so I just assumed, hey, it's the worst that's going to happen. So got into the stand about, I guess it was about 5:35, 45, about 20, 30 minutes into the sit, I could hear pigs behind me. And I thought for sure it was the same group that showed up every single morning, and they ended up getting downwind, smelling me and just moving off, and which was good. Good and bad. I mean, it was still dark, so I couldn't shoot them anyways, but good that they left. That means that if a deer comes in, they're not going to be worried about the pigs. They're going to come right in, do their thing. It's going to be great. So I sat about first light. The squirrels started going crazy, which is typical in there for when a pack of pigs is coming. So I was getting ready. It was still real dark and nothing ever ended up coming in. So I kind of got relaxed, and I'm guilty of, you know, checking polo every once in a while. So I was on the Marco Polo looking to see if anybody got lucky already, you know, that first light to light, and nothing was going on there. Or actually, no, I lied. I think it was Too Tall shot a buck.
Yeah.
And I was looking at, I was watching his polo, and I could just hear something off in the distance. So I just put my phone away, and I'm just sitting there, and I look to my left, and he's already underneath me like 15 yards. I don't know how he snuck in the way he did. And he is directly downwind. So I see him, he's off to my left. So it's perfect. I don't have to stand up. I can just draw back. I wait for him to put his head down. He puts his head down, turns broadside. I get the bow up, get it ready. As soon as I knew he wasn't going to catch me, I draw the bow back. And as soon as I was about to squeeze the trigger, I noticed that he moved. So I took my eye off the peep and I looked over at him, and he was quartering to me again. So I kind of just set the bow down, held the bow back the whole time. And I could tell he wasn't about, you know, he wasn't planning on turning broadside anytime soon. He was kind of just checking everything out. he eventually picked his head up and almost looked right at me. And then I think there was a pig behind me, and he turned to look at that. When he did that, he like telescoped his head as high as he can, you know, stretch his neck and look that direction. And I'm not a big fan of a frontal shot. I've had really good success with it and really bad. So I was iffy on it, and I didn't even know that it was the buck that I ended up killing. I thought it was a little bit of a smaller buck that we've had on camera in the past. That has a really big body, but you know, smaller basket rack, 9 point, nothing crazy, probably a 60, 70 inch buck. I mean, small rack. And, I couldn't help it. I mean, when he telescoped his neck, it was just like a perfect target. So I ended up shooting him about midway up his neck. Punched through a lung, the liver, and came out right in the belly, about mid body.
Dang.
And he did a big mule kick, ran right underneath me. I watched him run, never heard him crash. I felt really, really good about the shot. I think I even said in the polo group, I was like, man, I know I hit him hard.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I couldn't see the arrow laying there, so I wasn't real sure. I figured the frontal shot, you know, I probably hit something to stop the arrow. And just waited about an hour. as you can tell, I'm getting over a cough. So I held a cough in all morning. So after I shot him, I just couldn't help it. I was so jacked up. I just started coughing, and I'm like, well, my hunt's over, you know. There's no point in staying seated. So I got down and just walked the track about 30 yards total, just kind of getting an idea on what happened, see if I could find blood. Well, I ended up finding a little bit of blood, and I found my arrow covered in gut, which I expected because of the shot, which was a good sign, actually. It tells me that I actually went through the center of the body and not down the side or something.
Right.
As soon as the arrow came out, he started pouring blood out. So I was super confident after that. Ended up backing out. My buddy lives right down the road that hunts out there with me, and he's got blood trailing dogs. So he wanted to put his dogs on it just to give them a confidence builder, you know. Plus, at the end of the day, we weren't even sure, you know, how far the deer ran, if there was going to be blood, you know, coming out the guts tend to clog the exit. So, we just played it safe. So I ran over, got the dogs. He met me back at the spot afterwards, and, dogs got on it, took it about 60 yards further from where I stopped. It was about a 80 yard track total. And, they brought us to a dead deer, and he was a lot bigger than what I anticipated.
Yeah. He had some junk on his bases. Like he was a dang good deer.
He's got a really nice side, 5-on-1 side. And then the other side, I don't know if he had an injury. I didn't see one when I cleaned him, but, the other side of his rack, he just had the, 3 points. So he had three, he had a brow and a G2 in the main beam. And then he had two more brows that aren't quite an inch, but they count for the
You can hang a ring on them.
Patreon deer contest. Yeah, that's all I cared about.
11 points. I think you tried to put in there 9 points, and we were like, no, that's got 11 points. We need those two extra points. So that, man, that's
I pointed it out, but
it plays out, man, and that's awesome that your opening morning hunt played out the way it did. Did you you were saying the wind was wrong or anything? Did you forget anything going in? Like, I know a lot, like for myself, I'm usually a cluster when I go in. Did you have everything you needed?
Yeah, no, I had the whole day before to prep, because I actually ended up calling out of work, so I made sure I had my backpack full of everything that I could possibly need, and I mean, it was a really just simple hunt. I mean, everything was perfect. I don't know if you were on the group last year, but I actually hunted that same spot last season. And it was, if I'm not mistaken, it was a little later in the year, and I had already flung so many arrows at pigs and deer. I was down to two arrows, and long story short, two arrows wasn't enough for that sit, because I missed a buck twice, climbed down to go grab my arrows, was only able to find one, got back up in the tree with that one arrow, and then ended up shooting a buck about 40 minutes later, a completely different buck that was wounded. I don't know what happened to him, but yeah, it was absolutely wild. And if I wasn't, you know, if I was prepared, that would have been one of the craziest hunts of my life, but unfortunately I hit that buck, that second one, and I hit that second buck, and he kind of bedded down behind me about 40 yards, and I just grazed him. But he was, I don't know what was wrong with him. He came in limping. He actually came in with a hog, a big boar hog. Like, they were buddies. They came in side by side. It was the craziest thing I've ever seen. But if I had a second arrow after the second deer, I would have definitely been able to harvest him. But we put a dog on him and everything, and he was long gone. Dogs didn't even want to track him, so that tells us that he wasn't mortally wounded. He was just taking a break, I think.
I just had to rest. Him and that pig were probably taking care of each other, making sure they had plenty of food, guarding the feeders and taking out all the corn.
It was the craziest thing I've ever seen.
God. Well, Cole, man, I appreciate you coming on here and telling your story. That's, to do it in Florida is one thing, and then to do it on opening day, that's another, man. So I've said it in polo, but, man, congrats again. You live on that high for a while, but you still got a long season to go and a lot more deer to kill. Yeah. So a lot more deer, a lot more pigs. Quick question before we end. This has just kind of been on my mind, but how many pigs do you think you eradicate each year?
Oh my goodness.
If you're not comfortable saying, that's fine, but I'm just curious.
You know, I told myself I was going to start keeping a log, but I just never do. I would say typically in a year, just myself, probably a couple to
hold on. Say that again. You broke up for a second.
Yeah, I would say probably anywhere from 1 to 300 a year.
God, man, that's crazy. And
yeah,
deal with them. Well, you're making an impact on the hog population and the deer population as well. So, watch out, and man, I hope you have a good season. But until then, we will continue our podcast and continue our SoCo stuff. So next time you see us, throw a log on the fire, and we'll talk to y'all later.